Happy Thursday out there, Team 42. It's your skipper here, Darius Dell, to present our macro minute for Thursday, February 26, 2026. I just want to give a happy birthday shout out to my beautiful dear mother, as well as my beautiful dear niece. I hope you guys are having a wonderful day. May today be the start of the best year of your lives. So as always, we'll start with the executive summary from today's leadoff morning note. So let's dive right in. Today's key macro question is, will investors reward stellar results from NVIDIA? The answer, no. Here's the most important thing we learned today regarding the six key macro cycles that influence the momentum and dispersion within and across asset markets on a trend basis. Starting with growth, NVIDIA is down 2% today despite posting sizable beats to Q4 sales and earnings and Q1 guidance, indicating that the Magnificent Seven remains a source of funds to capitalize other businesses with. Still, the market currently views NVIDIA as a clear winner among Magnificent Seven constituents, according to our volatility adjusted momentum signal. Moreover, the market currently views tech and communication services stocks as a source of funds for the other sectors, and semiconductors as a clear winner relative to software, according to our VAMs as well. Lastly, the market currently views legacy software stocks as a source of funds for AI disruptor software stocks, which continue to trend higher, by the way, indicating a healthy level of discernment within the equity market, according to our VAMs. Inflation, nothing actionable, monetary policy. The latest initial and continuing job claims data suggests the low fire condition within the U.S. labor market persists, which supports the Fed's guidance to leave policy unchanged for a while. Nothing actionable with respect to fiscal policy. Liquidity, the February European Commission survey data signal firming inflation pressures across the Eurozone economy. This divergence in ECB and Fed forward policy rate pricing momentum is supportive of our bearish bias on the US dollar, which is bullish for global liquidity. And then finally, positioning, the fastest year-over-year growth in Japan's machine tool orders in January supports the improving global growth backdrop, as well as our call for capital flows to continue rotating out of US assets into their less expensive international counterparts. And for those who may not be familiar, Japan machine tool orders is one of the best, is arguably the best leading indicator for the global industrial cycle from a time series statistical perspective. So definitely keep your eyes on that monthly time series. So as always, continue reviewing to learn if and how our institutional grade risk management overlays, KISS and Dr. Mo, are evolving their signals in response to these fundamental dynamics. So as always, transitioning to our 42 macro dashboard, as always, a wrap up with a question from our community. This one is regarding the labor market, AI's impact on the labor market. So it says, good day, DD. I'm a new subscriber, but I've followed you for many years. Since you were the leadoff presenter with that other guy, I appreciate all you do for us. And I was happy to see when you left and went out on your own. Thank you. With such a high level of JOATS contraction, doesn't it mean there will be fewer people spending and consuming less? Meaning companies will have to produce and sell less, meaning sales and profits will fall, and stock prices will fall. Isn't this going to be the opposite of when Henry Ford increased wages to $5 an hour so that workers could afford to buy his cars? With white-collar workers now moving to blue-collar jobs, high wages to low wages, there will be less money to spend on goods, services, and investment. Jobs that are now done by consumers and spenders are being taken over by AI, which neither consumes nor spends. How can this create any kind of recovery? So excellent question, phenomenal question. I think, sort of using analytical or argument, you sort of taking the argument to its logical extreme to sort of expose the fallacies in the argument. My point, the point we're making on jobs recovery is that we could be decades away from this logical extreme, this draconian outcome. What matters most to markets is the rate of change of, key economic variables, the rate of change of policy, the rate of change of political dynamics, geopolitical dynamics. What matters is what changes at the margin relative to how consensus expects things to occur and their positioning and ultimately, the magnitude of that change. And so, in terms of our jobs recovery thesis, it's not going to be, we're not going to go from, one day that we have a fully gainfully employed labor market to a fully unemployed labor market that can't generate enough income to sustain consumption. What's likely to happen at the margins is what we continue to see in the labor market, which is a low hire labor market whereby companies are continuing to demonstrate very tepid, if not declining demand. I would argue declining demand is evidenced by the minus 62% three month annualized rate of change for JOATS
private payroll, private job openings in the most recent JOLTS report, minus 62% through my annualized rate of change. Declining labor demand, which will continue to depress the private sector hires rate, but this is not necessarily likely to cause a significant uptick in the unemployment rate for a couple of the reasons. One, companies can just use attrition and not replace people. When people leave the company, they don't necessarily have to replace them. They can replace people with AI once someone leaves or retires, which is what's been going on, by the way. And two, the companies that are most likely to actually cause their headcount to go down, to actually increase their fire rate and fire people, are the large companies that have quarterly earnings pressure as public companies. But the reality is they don't comprise a very large share of the total employment. I want to say, I think 90%+ of employment, certainly over 85% of employment, is at the small to medium size enterprise level. These are mostly mostly private enterprises. The large companies that we see, reporting earnings and all that stuff, that are firing people by the thousands, if not tens of thousands, as a function of this new technology diffusion, they're not the lion's share of employment, and certainly not the lion's share of employment growth. I want to say about 65% of all employment growth comes from small businesses. So what's likely to continue to happen is, what's most important in this entire discussion is, I think we're forgetting that, the stock market doesn't necessarily represent GDP, and the stock market doesn't represent GDP or PCE, which is personal consumption. The stock market represents a call option on future cash flows of a business. And obviously credit is, somewhat different, but similar. Can you get your money back from the business that you lent to? And so the reality is, if the profits are going up, it doesn't matter how much people consume in the real economy. It doesn't matter how much GDP the real economy produces. What matters is the profitability of the company. You can have a declining GDP environment with profits going up if the profitability of companies in aggregate, because the function of this statistic, is rising faster than GDP is falling. Profitability can be rising fast. This can happen, which is something I've been warning about for the past 6 months. Which is, I was on our friend Maria Bartiromo's show back last fall, and I said, hey, doing this with my band, which I did on my national TV, hey, you're going to have a stock market start doing this and the real economy doing this. That is the risk. I don't know what the logical end of that, because obviously you got people voting and regulation that could come as a function of people voting, or pitchforks coming out, at the fourth turning climax, and I don't want to go there today, but, I don't know what the end game is on all this, but from this starting point, you could easily see multiple years, if not at least a decade, of GDP growth slowing and profitability accelerating. And here's why. And I'll shut up and leave you with this final chart. Here's why. The true promise of AI isn't mere efficiency. AI is an effective tool to cut what is still most companies' biggest cost, which is labor. This chart, this blue line in this chart, which is sourced from our most recent, our monthly macro scouting report, our February macro scouting report. The blue line in this chart is labor's share of national income, employee compensation as a function, as a ratio of gross domestic income. We've been in an all-out assault on labor share of national income for decades now as a function of the laissez-faire neoliberalism movement, which prioritized corporate profitability over, the well-being of humanity. And that's something that obviously is ongoing and is likely to accelerate as a function of AI. The true promise of AI isn't that this line continues to trend down, is that the blue line falls off the bottom of the page. If the blue line falls off the bottom of the page, the red line's going to jump off the top of the page. And I drew that very poorly. That's the true promise of AI. That's what I'm trying to explain to you guys, is that you don't need people consuming stuff at Walmart. Maybe it'll hurt Walmart, but these companies could sell stuff to each other. NVIDIA doesn't sell anything to consumers. So I want people to realize that this divergence, which will ultimately end very poorly for society, may not end poorly for the stock market or the credit market on a, in risk manageable time horizon. Eventually it will end poorly on a risk manageable time horizon as a function of the political response and a function of the regulatory response and a function of the geopolitical response, because this kind of stuff causes economies, inequality causes economies to go to war. If you don't agree with that, that means you have not read Peter Turchin's books. They're very dense books, a lot of math in those books, a lot of numbers and statistics, very thin font. A lot of people don't like reading books like that, but I have to read books like that to be good at my job. So I'll leave you guys with that book recommendation, and we'll catch back here tomorrow. So Darius Dell here.
presenting our Macro Minute for Thursday, February 26, 2026. Best of luck out there today. We'll catch you back here tomorrow. Cheers.
Disclaimer, 42 Macro does not provide, and no portion of our content purports to be, individualized or specific investment advice. And 42 Macro does not provide investment advice to individuals. All information provided by 42 Macro is general in nature and is made without regard to individual levels of sophistication or investment experience, investment preferences, objectives, or risk parameters, and without regard to the suitability of the content for individuals or entities who may access it. No information provided by 42 Macro should be construed as an offer to sell or a solicitation of an offer to buy any security or investment vehicle, nor should it be construed as tailored or specific to you or consumer thereof. You understand and agree that our content does not constitute specific recommendations of any particular investment, security, portfolio, transaction, or strategy, nor does it recommend any specific course of action is suitable for any specific person or entity or group of persons or entities. At any point in time, the employees of 42 Macro may own a portion of or all the ETF securities discussed in 42 Macro Research content. 42 Macro Research content is based upon information from sources believed to be reliable. 42 Macro is not responsible for errors, inaccuracies, or omissions of information, nor is it responsible for the accuracy or authenticity of the information upon which it relies.